Is that Browns what we saw on Sunday real? Is that a repeatable offense that can go score more than 20 points a game, unlike what we saw before? Yes or no?
Yes. You know why I say that?
This is the good part. Yes.
Because I think what we saw in the first seven games is not what we thought we would see this year. I thought that was the aberration more than Sunday was the aberration. Do you know what I mean? The offense was so bad. And no other way to describe it, under Deshaun. It was so bad. Now, there were other issues, okay? We all know that. There were other factors.
Give you three, right? Offensive line was a mess, and you didn't have Nick Chubb.
There you go. And so there are other factors. But I thought the offense would be better. I didn't think it would be great, but I thought the offense would certainly be better than not scoring more than 18 points in a game and not being able to get the ball downfield and not having a 200-yard passing game. You know, you had Amari Cooper for a good chunk of this. Imagine if... And no complaints about the receivers who are here because, boy, have they played well under Jameis. They've looked terrific. But what if Amari Cooper were in this crew? You know? I mean, it's a wide receiver group that I've wanted additions to.
I don't think Cedric Tillman flourishes as much if Amari Cooper's
going. I think you're absolutely right. But I think Amari Cooper is probably still the best receiver of that crew. At least for now. It might not take long until maybe somebody keeps coming. You never know.
Jerry Jeudy
has shown the most life he's shown all year.
Yeah.
Elijah Moore has shown the most life he's shown all year. And Cedric Tillman getting an opportunity and going nuts with it. I mean, for whatever it's worth, Cedric Tillman, according to all the fantasy football websites, the number one roster claim. If you don't have him, you've missed out.
Really?
That's a guy who wasn't even... Didn't even scratch the surface of anything here in the last year in six games. And now all of a sudden he's like the number one hot pickup in fantasy football. A Browns receiver, think about that, is the hot pickup in fantasy football. Why? Because he's produced on the field. He's been really good. So, Andy, I think more than anything, what we saw before was the aberration. And what we've seen now is more of what we expected. Now, is it repeatable?
I think
yes, but you got to remember the Ravens' pass defense was injured and awful. They had the worst pass defense in the NFL yardage wise coming into this game. So this game coming up against the Chargers, I think will be another indication. I don't care that the Ravens had the worst pass defense. And I say that because the Browns were just horrendous on offense. And it was the Ravens. Browns were 1-6. Browns needed a win.
I think the biggest winner here as far as getting to the end zone is David Njoku. You know, Njoku twice now has been able to connect with Winston to be able to get touchdowns. You know,
same with Tillman.
Right. Well, but every game. So now he's got a little bit of a streak going here.
Yeah. He's got a little Freddie Freeman thing going, is what you're saying.
Can he hit a grand slam for us this week? I feel like that. I was listening to Aditi Kinkabala this morning on the morning show.
God bless you.
Thank you. And she said something I thought was super interesting. She looking at these other two win teams out there and saying, like, the Bengals kind of feel like a two win team, right? And
they feel like a three win team, don't they?
Well, yeah, I guess so. You're right. But on defense, they feel like a 2-3 win team, right? You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Like on defense, I don't see the talent.
How about we take a number away and we say, they feel like an team.
Well, the point was is that she was making this point about how, you know, some teams kind of feel like it's over and they don't have, and that the Browns have talent. Like the talent doesn't match the record. At least that's the way I felt coming out Sunday. And now that you've got a quarterback that is going to get rid of the ball quick, he's not going to run into his own guys or run into a sack. I mean, again, he was on pace for like 90 sacks for the entire season. I mean, that's like insane. Jameis got sacked twice.
Yeah, but Andy, that's a byproduct of his career, too.
I mean,
it's something he's done since he's been in the league. That's
just
the way.
Didn't work here.
No, it hasn't so far, and I mean, we may never find out again if it will. Maybe we will. I don't know.
All right, so what has to happen for this to maintain, to be what – I don't even know if winning or losing is the factor here, right? Like, you have the talent. I mean, look at those wide receivers, just like you said, Jeff. I mean, these guys we were looking for them on milk bottles a couple days ago.
They've started to erase a little bit of doubt. Okay, you know, I've been high on Cedric Tillman since he got here. I've wanted to see him. Let's see what this guy can do.
Coincided with the legalization of stuff here too, almost the exact time. You just said you're high on. You're good with it. Yeah.
Wow. I've wanted to see him, but A, we didn't see any wide receiver do well, and B, Amari Cooper was here. And so that was partially keeping Cedric off the field. Andy, he's looked good. I mean, he's tons of targets. He's been the most productive wide receiver in the NFL the last 2 weeks. And I know there was some thought that in the previous game, okay, well, you know, Deshaun got hurt and DTR was his high school teammate and that helped. And then, you know, Jameis came in and everything else, but, you know, his high school teammate, that helped. No, his high school teammate didn't throw him the ball on Sunday. Mm. Didn't throw him two touchdown passes. Mm. That was Jameis. And so that's, I think he's really interesting. Thank God we saw Elijah Moore. I mean, seriously, there when Elijah came into the league, when he was in his rookie year with the Jets, he looked really promising. And then it kind of crumbled on him there. And I'm not sure why. And that's why the Browns were able to get him. But the Browns had to pay a decent price for him. That's the best he's looked since he's been here, I think. And he looked like a guy when I'm watching a football game where I thought, please give him the ball. Get the football to him. I thought the same thing about Tillman. I thought the same thing about Judy. When's the last time you thought that about three Browns receivers?
Jarvicious, Winslow, and
Braylon.
And Braylon, yeah. I mean, I don't think these three are those three, but.
Not yet.
At least now there might be a path.
But guess what? Yeah, I'd like to. Let's put it this way. I'd sure like to see more. I'd like to see more.
Well, it's not going to be for a lack of throwing the ball with James Winston as your quarterback, right? That's not going to be an issue. So you talked about the things that may have hindered Deshaun that Jameis had at his accessories, as his accessories, on Sunday with Nick Chubb. And then why did DeJuan Jones suddenly look like a left tackle?
You know what the thing about DeJuan?
And was it because Jameis gets rid of the ball so fast?
Well, there was one play. It was right before half when Jameis got sacked.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if DeJuan missed the block or an assignment or if somebody else missed a pickup or whatever. Other than that, did you even really notice that DeJuan was out there?
No, and what's interesting is,
that's what you want, right?
So being in the press box, I probably had four or five people come up to me because I was still trying to digest what we saw. Yeah. And they were like, hey, that wasn't his fault. He was, the blocking scheme was to the inside, not to the out, and then the out opened up. So that he was blocked, unless he misread his blocking scheme, but his block was to the in, and the sack came from the out. At least that's what I was told by, and I had, people walk out of there going, hey, that wasn't his fault. I'm like, well, why is everybody suddenly being his defender? did he need a lawyer in the press box?
Do you know why, Andy?
Because they want him to succeed?
Because the idea of 6'8" and 340 pounds playing left tackle well is really appealing.
It is.
That's why. That's why.
I mean, we've gone from DeJuan Jones.
Andy, if he's good, think about that. If he's good, he's your left tackle for the next decade.
And we've made mistakes on the offensive line before. I just listen to people who have sat at this mic and just trashed guys on our offensive line who, for some reason, maybe played bad, but never really gave them a chance to grow, and then they end up going to play for the Mitchell Schwartz thing.
That didn't work.
It didn't work here. It seemed to work everywhere else.
No, that's what I mean.
Yeah, I mean, but we wanted to crush him every day. We wanted to make fun of him. And it was just like, why are we jumping all over this guy so quickly? And then all of a sudden, he ends up, and then we were mad when he left because they wanted to keep him. And then he ends up having a good career. So, mm-hmm. As far as trying to believe in this team, so the defense, I believe, stayed consistent. Made plays when they needed them to. They've been the same consistent defense. I think the biggest difference was they weren't gassed. They only had one series. It was a lengthy series in that first quarter, But they didn't look gassed at the end of the game. And I had faith in them towards the end of the game too. Like I didn't think they were going to score. But although I was getting worried as you're counting 1-1000, 2-1000, 3-1000, 4-1000s when the Ravens are trying to set up a play at the end of the game while they're in that.
You're allowed to rush. It's not like, you know, 5 Mississippi.
But it's what it felt like though, didn't it? And he would still roll out to that same point and you'd see, you know, one of the big ugly defensive linemen have him and go after him.
Somebody's little baby, not big ugly.
They're big uglies. They'll always be the big uglies.
I thought those were offensive linemen.
Either way, you're a lineman, you're a big ugly.
I don't think it's very nice.
Well, you give me another nickname.
Harsh, lineman.
All right, you're a defensive lineman who's just sprinted, you know, 10 yards past the line of scrimmage because
so
you thought you had.
A big lineman.
So you tried to, you know, you look like you were sitting there on the edge of having a sack, and then all of a sudden... You just watch Lamar just go right around you, and now all of a sudden he's standing there, and he's got an open pocket, and he's got time to set both feet and try to figure out where it is while your defensive backs are trying to cover as much ground as they possibly can, and then you got to hope that he doesn't throw a touchdown pass, which he didn't, and that's how you ended up getting a victory. But I still wonder if this is going to be the norm. Can this be the norm? Can they compete against the rest of the NFL? So that we can kind of sit back and not look at the fact they only have 2 wins, right? You're sitting here and you're going, they got 2 wins. I don't know how far this thing's going to go. But I didn't feel that way. It was just rejuvenation, I think, watching Sunday's game and then thinking, all right, well, maybe there is some hope. You got the other Harbaugh coming up with the Chargers on Sunday, and then you got a week off. And I don't know if that week off is at the right time or not. So all those things are sitting out there in front of you. You know, we spent the last couple of days talking about, and I just brought it up in the first segment, do you think what we saw on Sunday has legs, like it's real? Like you believe that they can repeat what they were able to do. Then you kind of dive a little bit deeper into the quarterback conversation. And I think there's two things that have really stuck out to me over the last 2 days, okay? One, can Jameis Winston be the long-term quarterback here? Beyond this year, and could you see a future with him at quarterback? I still think it's too early to say that, but could he be? The other thing that always catches my ear, Jeff, is the conviction I hear from people saying that they think Deshaun Watson will never take another snap for the Browns. The conviction that he's done here. He's never playing here again. And I hear that, and I'm like...
Do you have that?
No, I don't. I'm nowhere
don't
near
either.
That
I
because
don't have that either.
I look at the big picture on this stuff that it's not just, you know, folks. He's done. He'll never, ever, ever take another snap here. I've heard that on the air, and it's not like I hear, you know, people in the media saying that, and then I also hear people on the other, like fans calling in and go. I heard one this morning as I was driving in, but over the last 2 days, I've heard it constantly. Deshaun Watson is done here with conviction. And I just
but guess what?
I don't think that's true.
Yeah, they're not making the decisions.
Right. It's almost like I listen to some of the callers say it too, and I'm like, okay, if it was your team, he wouldn't be the quarterback, and you would figure out a way to eat the salaries and say, hey, thanks, but no thanks down the road. But it just doesn't work that way. It sounds great on your fantasy team. Oh, I'm done with him. I'm never picking him up again. That's not reality. It's not. And like I even heard the promo of something I said yesterday, just saying that money rules the world, and it does. And that's why I don't think
you
can
say
rule.
That?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
And they turned that into a promo?
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Wow.
As I was listening to it, because I sounded too soft-spoken when I said it. I was like, wow, what are you trying to sell there?
Hi, I'm Andy Baskin, and I'm deep.
Yeah, much deeper than
this. Money rules the world.
It does. But it comes back to the reason why I think we'll see Deshaun Watson again down the road. You can't walk away from it.
I'm not going to say that. I don't know that we will, but I also
you don't know that you won't though.
Yeah, I'm Switzerland on this one.
Dan, can you say with conviction we'll never see Deshaun Watson in a Browns? You know, not I don't know if we'll see him in a Browns uniform. Never take another snap for the Browns again.
No, you can't say it with conviction because. They owe him
92 million reasons.
Yeah, they have 90. You're right, Jeff. They got 92 million reasons. Now, in a perfect world where the number one goal is to win football games, yeah, you'll never see him in a Browns uniform again. But we don't live in a perfect world where the number one goal is to win football games. If we did, I don't think you would have seen Deshaun Watson through the first two games of this season. We don't live in that world. They paid the cash. Now you got to see if there's anything here to get any semblance of return on investment.
And when you hear people say he'll never take another snap, I've heard it so many times over the last couple of days, and I'm just like, ah, I'm listening. I hear what you're saying. I can hear your conviction, and your conviction is like, I'm like, I hear it with so much passion that I start to think, man, maybe could they be right? Could that be? I don't think it's true. But it's not only callers. I've heard media people say it too, and I'm like, wow. That's not thinking from the real world, I think, some of that.
Let's lay it out, though.
Okay.
The folks who are saying it are thinking that there is going to be a better alternative here. Is Jameis Winston that better alternative? Because let's be honest about
Jeff,
this.
Jeff, he was two plays away from having a nightmare that game on Sunday.
Even
the way he threw the ball.
Even if Hamilton had caught that interception, okay, even if he had caught that, it still would have been a better performance at quarterback than anything we would have seen this year.
True.
So true. Let's just keep that in mind. Here's the one thing with Jameis. And I thought he looked good the other day. I enjoyed watching him play. I enjoyed watching a passing offense that really worked. I thought he did a great job. If he goes out and plays that way the rest of the year, can the Browns afford him? Can the Browns afford him in a new contract, if they even want to keep him, if he goes out and plays this way?
Well, let's talk to our general manager.
Because he'll end up getting a contract from somebody else, Andy. He'll make $20 to $25 million. I mean, that's half the going rate for good quarterbacks these days. I mean, Dak Prescott just got 60.
How much could they afford, Dan, to do that? He's our cap guru guy.
And oh, by the God, way, I would find someone far more qualified.
That Dan's degree in communications certainly qualifies him for that.
Hey,
just like ours.
And we do realize that most people take the communications classes because they hated math in high school. That's why.
Journalism degree. Thank you very much. Not just a straight communications. Journalism.
That explains a lot.
I done be trained to words good.
Nice. You is good. And on top of that, you're great at no source reporting. I think you're excellent at that.
Sources.
Don't you think that Jameis could play his way out of here financially? Well,
so
that's the only fight.
So then you go back to this notion that you might want to trade him by the fifth.
So here's the other question that comes with this.
And I don't want to.
So let's
I'm a Jameis fan.
Let's operate in the world where you're going to bring Jameis Winston back for, you throw out 20 mil. For the sake of just easy math, let's say 20 mil.
Well, wait a second. If you have 20 mil, can I borrow some money, man?
Honestly, for a quarterback.
Against the cap, no.
For a quarterback, in this day and age, let's just say he produces like he did in the last game more often than he doesn't. That's 20 mil easy.
Okay, so
can easy. They pay it? They
easy.
Have it?
Again, let's say this happens, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Going into next season, you bring Jameis Winston back for $20 million. The cap number is $72 million for Deshaun Watson. So you would owe $92 million to quarterbacks.
I'm not saying you've benched or that you've gotten rid of Deshaun, right? Because if you do, then it's worse.
Now, could you do it?
Hey, hang on. Can you backtrack on this? So when we talk about this all the time, where you know they turn Deshaun's salary into
You yank the lever, you turn it into the signing bonus,
you turn it into
a cap penalty down the road.
So what does that do then to the $92 million? You're still paying $92 million if you give him $20 million, right?
Correct. So like in the overall, like to do this cap gymnastics, that 92 wouldn't hit the cap. I don't know what the number is that it would. I'm not a math major. Again, I was trained to words and I don't even do that well.
That's true.
So you would turn that into something. I'm just saying, like, if I were to come up to you, Andy, as a business owner, and I was going to say to you, at one position of your business, you're going to be paying one guy $72 million, actually technically $46 million, but that's beside the point.
Right.
You're going to pay one guy, and then you're going to bring somebody else in and pay him $20 million to do his exact job. What would you say if you were a business owner?
I'd probably go talk to my accountant and see how much of it I could write off as a business loss.
That's the problem. Yeah. There is no business loss in the NFL.
Yeah.
They don't allow it.
Yeah, the salary cap doesn't have a tax write-off. So that's the other side of this.
More punitive than the IRS.
You would have to walk up to Jimmy Haslam and go, Jimmy, how are you? Good to see you. How you feeling today? Hey, sit down. I got something I got to tell you. You know how we're giving $46 million to this guy? Well, we're going to pay someone else $20 million to do his exact job.
Yeah, see, that's...
Yeah.
Well, what are we doing now?
The answer here is...
paying him $8 million, which is a little more tolerable.
The answer here is DTR plays like Jameis did.
That's your winner.
That's the answer here.
Cammy?
Not if he doesn't play.
I don't know.
After what Jameis said the other day, are you taking him out? Nope. Kevin Stefanski isn't either.
So Aditi said something else this morning that kind of aggravated me. Okay.
Oh, good.
Because this, like, DTR, I defended him last year for him getting thrown into the fire against Baltimore here at home, right? She was like, you know, he had no idea he was going to start against Cincinnati. And now I'm like, he's been in the league for a year. He's got to understand that there is a chance he could play in any game. He was the backup quarterback. And I'm like, I don't want to hear it. That's an excuse now. If you're a backup quarterback, you better be ready to play. You're ready.
Yeah,
you better be. When she said that this morning, my stomach kind of turned. She was like, and he didn't have any notice that he was going to be playing against Cincinnati. Well, guess what? He was the backup. I think these guys, when they go to the stadium and you're a backup, what's the line? You're one play away. You're always one play away.
You prepare all week like you're going to play and start.
Yeah, I mean, you may not get the reps in practice, but mentally you've got to play in practice like the next play is yours. Like, you know, what if a superstar gets hurt? You better be ready to go in. If you're a practice player, you better be ready to take the next step up because that's why you're there. You're there to be one play away. And when she said that, well, you know, they threw him in against Cincinnati and, you know, he didn't even have a chance. He didn't even know. Who cares? Your job is to be one play away. Like, now it's an excuse. Baltimore was a little different. He was a rookie. You know, it was like a last second thing. But still, he had to have in the back of his mind, hey, there's a chance I could play today. Every time they walk in that stadium, when you're a backup, you better believe and you better be ready to play because you never know what's going to happen. And to me, that was just one of those moments I was like, that's just an excuse. DTR's got to be ready to go. He's got to be ready to go this week. He's the backup, we're assuming. All right.
Can I be the biggest jerk of jerks right now?
Sure, go ahead. Yeah,
stop.
So remember all of those things that you came out and said with people with DeJuan Jones and they were coming up to you and go, well, you know, that one really wasn't his fault. And, you know, he really wasn't ready and he looked good in that one. You're doing the exact opposite of that. And Aditi's doing the same thing with DTR because the clearest path out of the Deshaun Watson hole is DTR.
Absolutely.
That's the clear.
So be ready.
He's here. B, he's cheap.
Uh-huh.
Okay, well, be ready then. I don't want to hear he's not ready to play. And the thing we were doing with... Well,
don't get mad at her. She's just doing a job.
No, I know. The thing about Deshaun, I'm not mad at her. But you're also asking Deshaun because we're sitting around juggling what side of the line he should play.
Yeah, but Andy, could Jameis be your guy? Think about that.
All right, let's think about that.
Could he be the guy?
All right, let's get back to this quarterback conversation. Where let's bring in Stefan. Hey, Stefan.
Hi, Stefan.
How you guys doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. So I've been listening all morning. Just hear me out on this. Okay. I think that the best way that we fans are going to have, we're just going to have to realize that there's no easy fix to this. As much as we may not want it to end like this, Deshaun Watson, when he comes back next year, is going to more than likely be the quarterback. Jameis Winston, I honestly see him signing with another team in the offseason if he continues to play good. And let's say somebody is willing to offer Cleveland a trade for DTR, the only person you have then is Deshaun Watson. So I think it's more so the conversation we need to have is how do we make Deshaun Watson work? What is it that we can kind of, you know, pull from his ability to get him going? offensively. That's really what I see. I don't really see an easy fix for this because you can't get rid of him. There's too much money on the contract. I know Jimmy's not about to do that. I know he's not.
I can't imagine getting rid of him either.
I can't either.
The only, you
know, because
of the money, Stefan. I think you're right. Can you send him home and figure out a way out of this without killing yourselves? That's the question the Browns have to deal with.
You're not going to put him on the bench. Let's be honest about that now. Even if you brought him to training camp with a quarterback competition between him and Jameis, you got 70 million reasons why he should be the starter come game one. So I don't see it.
So can you see a scenario where he is on the roster but just not there? Like they'll be like, hey man, if he's done this once before, you're gonna be inactive every week, and you don't need to come to the stadium, and you don't need to come to Berea. We're just gonna pay you.
I don't see Jimmy being that type of person to have to make that declaration that I made a bad financial business decision like that. I honestly think that Jimmy is willing to say, hey, let's give him a different play caller. Let's give him a healthy offensive line. Let's give him his starting running back. And then if none of that works, then we'll have to figure out from there. I really, that's where I see it. I mean, because when season starts, he didn't have two offensive linemen. There's some things that you could say was lacking, but plus he's coming back from a shoulder, injury he had as well. But I just, like I said, I don't see Jimmy making that call saying you can just stay at home and we're going to pay you. I don't see that happening.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Stefan. Appreciate it. Good phone call. Let's go to Will, who's in either Olmsted Falls or North Olmsted. Where are you, Will? What's going on? I'm not getting good clicks today. No, my mouse is a mess. Hi, Will. How are you?
I'm doing good. The other guy said, I've been listening all morning. And what does Deshaun Watson thing? I agree that I don't think that the people in Cleveland are giving up on his qualities and what he can do. I think they've given up with more of the absentee and not performing and the lifestyle that he has. And I think they're just tired of it, but once again, we need him to pull us in through the next season. And, I just don't think that's fair to him because he is a good player, but because of his antics, I think Cleveland has just had enough of it.
All right. Well, thank you. I don't know, Jeff. We've spent so much time talking about Deshaun. When we talk about him, I'm strictly on the football part of it. And so you can talk about. I mean, I understand
that's
there's a lot of people that
that's
aren't.
That's why he's on the roster.
And I don't
football
right. And so to me, it's on field performance, and it's trying to evaluate if his game is where it's at because he's sat out. Is it where he's at because the offensive line struggled? Is it because he can't get in sync with the wide receivers? Is he not a good running back? Is it because of the poach? Is it? I mean, we're looking and trying to figure out all the other factors because we know what he was like at one point. And at one point, we would have been like, wow, yeah, this is great. But at that point, this is true, the off-the-field stuff is like he wouldn't have been available, right? He would have been in Houston. He never would have left if they didn't have issues going on down there. You think? If I'm wrong.
Contractual things, too.
Maybe. It's interesting to watch and see how this thing all plays out and just kind of get your read on it and your feel for it. Real quick, I'm going to take a call. Lewis Shaker, go ahead. How are you, man?
Pretty good, man. I mean, I saw the tear, man. I saw it through a sock, man. If you had a complete rupture, from his gastroc and his Achilles, his calcaneus, he's not coming back from that, man. Mobility was his thing. He is not Nick Chubb. Mobility was his thing, and his mobility is not going to be 100% when he get back. It's probably going to never be 100% when he get back. And he was already scared to sit in the pocket from the beginning. And don't get me wrong, I'm a Deshaun Watson fan. I was in his corner, but I saw that. I'm like, oh, he's done. and me being a physical therapist assistant, I'm like, he's done. His career is over.
Lewis, how tough is it to come back from that if you're a younger person like Deshaun, as opposed to say Aaron Rodgers, who's 40?
I can't tell you because everybody heals different. Everybody heals differently. Who knows?
Just the stuff I've read, it said 9 months to return back to high impact. And I'm assuming that's the average, right? So that's just what I just read on Achilles rupture.
I mean, like I said, you guys saw it. I give him an extra 3, man. Oh my goodness.
Okay.
All right. I cringed when I saw it. I was like, oh my gosh.
We got you.
I'm like, the season's over.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it. You hear me on 92.3 The Fan every game day. Outstanding call this weekend, especially because it was a win and it was a lot of fun. He is Andrew Siciliano, and right now he's on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. And come on, this thing hates me. This mouse hates me today. How are you, my friend? I tried to set this good vibe. I tried to set the good vibe,
and then technology the computer let him down, hates Andrew. Me.
Yes,
technology let him down.
You're the chairman of the board, the chief of affection. I appreciate it right there.
It's all about you, my friend. All about you. Oh, man. First of all, and I'm not just saying this because we're friends, but great job on Sunday. I mean, it was it was an emotional heartstring tug between the game and with Jim Donovan and with Jim's passing, and just really nice job, because those aren't easy games to do when you've got a heavy heart, my friend.
I'm going to say thank you. Even saying thank you feels a bit off, though, because, we all wish we didn't have to. Obviously, be in that situation, and we wish Jim were still here. Clearly, that goes without saying. I honestly, guys, still haven't really processed the entire thing. I haven't even watched the whole call back. But your words mean a lot. I appreciate it. We, Nathan, everybody, were just trying to hit the right tone, and any emotions that came out were real and genuine and heartfelt. And it was a lot.
Yeah, and by the way, we didn't bring that up this morning, but last night during the World Series, what Scott Efros from Twinsburg, stand up to cancer.
How amazing was that?
That was really, I saw that this morning because I didn't catch it during the game. And then I was like, oh, that was awesome that, when they have that, everyone holds a sign up for them, stand up to cancer, and he honored Jim Donovan last night during the World Series. So it was amazing.
Cool. I had missed it too. I was at a dinner, didn't see the pregame, and I think I actually turned the game on right when Volpe was hitting a homer. And by the way, other than the Austin Wells, whatever the catcher's name is, every other home run last night in that building was a cheap Yankee Stadium home run, but I digress. I was just sitting here with Gibby and Nathan and everything, and Gibby goes, hey, did you see that? And I said, no, what? And he showed me the picture. I'm like, holy bleep, that was awesome.
Very cool.
That was very cool. Let's talk quarterback, shall we?
Sure.
What did Jameis do that you liked? Because obviously it was pretty effective.
Got the ball out quickly, pressed the ball downfield. And those are the two things I think that were lacking. Not to say Deshaun never got the ball out quickly. I mean, there were plenty of quick slants and balls to the flat. I mean, we saw that part of his game and saw it a lot. But Jameis got the ball out quickly and, through the outs and through the deep overs and through the curl. Jameis pushed the ball downfield, as we have seen in this offense in years past, whether it be Baker, whether it even be Jacoby Brissett, or whether certainly it be Joe Flacco last year. That's what the offense has looked like in years past, and Jameis got it back to that.
We're sitting here this morning trying to kick around if this is hopefully this is the norm moving forward. And I think part of it is teams have to plan to play against Nick Chubb, because Nick looked like he had that burst back on Sunday too. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you now have some cohesion a little bit better, a little bit stronger, and getting better every week on that offensive line.
Yeah, I think the line obviously plays a factor in it. I think Ken and Lima said it well this morning. Like, every part of the offense looked better. It's not just Jameis. The line blocked better. Everyone ran better. Guys were coming out of breaks expecting the football, caught the ball better. All of it looked better. Even the key is doing it again. And I'm not trying to be the negative Nancy here. It's great. Go do it again. Can you get a game in which, A, you don't throw the ball to the other team, and B, when you do, they don't catch it? That's what happened against the Ravens, right? I mean, they didn't catch it.
So
you can't give the Chargers a chance to catch it this week. At bonkers stat we just pulled up, too. The Browns haven't had a quarterback throw for 300 in consecutive games without a pick. That's the key one. 300 yards, no picks in consecutive games. You guys want to try to get the answer? When is the last time that happened?
I'm going to go Brian Sipe.
Not 300 yards. Not 1980 MVP Brian Sipe. No, good answer.
Thanks.
It was actually 2015 Josh McCown when he went on that heater earlier.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
It's been that long. And by the way, those are hard things to do. It's not necessarily the passing league it used to be even last year. So, I mean, if Jameis went 303 scores with no picks, 303 and no picks, he'd be the first quarterback to do that in the league in back-to-back weeks since Tua did it 2 years ago. Wow. So, you know, the key, though, is the no picks.
Andrew, one thing I thought was really interesting, when the Browns traded for Elijah Moore, you know, I'm thinking, okay, can he be that guy he was kind of his rookie year with the New York Jets, mm-hmm. that the Jets soured
on? You saw that.
And in 4 years with Jerry Jeudy in Denver, you thought, can Jerry Jeudy show some glimpses? And he showed those glimpses. And you brought in Cedric Tillman thinking he could be your big target down the field. Every one of those guys did what it was you brought them here to do with Jameis throwing that ball downfield. And to me, that might have been the most vital thing of all, because you didn't just solve a quarterback situation. At least for one game, you solved a wide receiver situation.
Exactly. Everyone kind of looked like the guy you hoped they would be when you sat there during the summer and got ready for the Greenbrier and said, all right, what does our roster look like? Well, they did the jobs that you had hoped. All of it came together in one game. And again, the key is to do it again, right? The key, and look, this week they are facing the number one scoring defense in the NFL. The Chargers are giving up the fewest points per game in the NFL, period. So they've allowed, I think, one 100-yard receiver all year. I think they've only allowed like three rushing touchdowns all year, something like that. So if they could do that against the Chargers, then yeah, you got something, period. This team's allowed only 20 points once. That was in their loss week 3 at Pittsburgh. They were 2-0. They went into Pittsburgh and lost to the Steelers 20-10. So the Ravens have a tradition of good defense, and they had the number one run defense coming in, but their pass defense was a mess, and they were down top their top two corners, and Marcus Williams is benched. This is a much different challenge this week. This is a really good and a talented and a well-coached team all around, but especially defensively. So they are absolutely going up in weight class with the opposition this week.
Maybe
so if Jameis can do that again and the numbers look the same, then you know what? Party time over the bye.
There you go. And maybe they'll be sleepy after the long flight. Maybe they'll serve turkey on the plane and they'll all have the trip and they'll be like, oh, we got to wake up and play the game.
Andrew, I deal with this every day.
Every day he deals with it.
Are you making L-tryptophan jokes?
Yeah,
here?
A little
Antoine
bit.
Randall L-tryptophan?
Yeah, a little bit.
Wow.
I'm trying to. We were talking about this today, too. Do you think that the league itself might be kind of might lean back towards more traditional quarterbacks that stay in the pocket? Or I mean, I know we're feeling a little bit of good vibe from Sunday, but, you know, the RPO generation, I don't know, could we twist back to more traditional, I'm going to stand in the pocket quarterback?
Maybe.
Okay.
But, you know, when you have a quarterback who has the threat of the run, it changes the numbers, it changes the math, and it's that much more difficult to defend. The most dangerous quarterback is a guy like Lamar, who has kind of morphed into a traditional stand-in-the-pocket quarterback who still has the ability to run and kill you, like the play with Asper, where, by the way, Miles was held badly by Ronnie Stanley. That could have been a safety. But he's standing in the end zone. The middle of the field is wide open. Okay, I'll go for 30. But he tried to stay back there for a while. I mean, there's a good 4 or 5 seconds on that drop in the end zone, around the one, around the two. No one opened downfield. Great coverage. He decided to run. So whether or not you want an RPO-based system, that's on your coaching. But to have the ability to be a pocket passer and kill you with your legs, Those are the difference makers.
Andrew Siciliano joining us, play-by-play for the Browns coming up on Sunday against the Los Angeles Chargers. Does one win change a philosophy at the trade deadline?
That's a great question. I don't know the answer, but it is certainly something to ponder. If they had lost that game, if it looked bad, I mean, would we be sitting here going, well, what could you get for Za'Darius Smith? You probably are still thinking that, mm-hmm. right? Or a Shelby Harris, right? The phone may still ring, but how do you respond when the phone rings? All the GMs talk. There are going to be a million conversations that aren't real trade talks, but more like, hey, would you give up that guy? Or, what about that guy? You know, teams, GMs do that all the time. Does one win change your philosophy? I don't know. I really don't. I guess it depends on what the offer is. Everyone's got a price, right? Might you give up one of the aforementioned guys there or somebody else this week for a far higher pick than you would have if you had lost? Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens, Andrew. It's all kind of, could go a number of different ways.
Think about it real quick. If you had lost and someone called for one of those two guys and flipped you a low round pick, maybe you take it because at that point you go, all right, we're going nowhere. We'll get a return.
Right.
But this week, that same player probably costs the other team a lot more, and you are far less willing to give that player up. And you have to be blown away because you got a little momentum. You got a little wind in your sails.
So we were kicking this around too. DeJuan Jones, like last week, I was like, okay, feels good. Like I thought he played a good game. Then we were about the PFF numbers. The PFF numbers weren't real good. What did you see? And what did we learn towards the future about DeJuan Jones?
I thought he played a good game, and it's something to build on. And I'd like to see him out there again. Yeah, did he in the red zone whiff on a block against Adafe Owe and Nick Chubb had to bounce it outside, and Owe totally blew that play up, and maybe can he get around left end and get into the end zone? Maybe. I don't know. He probably, look, PFF grades are very subjective. Mm-hmm. You have former O-line coaches who are working there as analysts and looking at film, you know, in their home offices at 3 in the morning, and I'm not in any way trashing PFF, but O-line play grades and a lot of those grades are... No, I'm not. I'm not. I love them. I use them all the time. I do. But some of those grades are subjective, right?
Right.
O-line grades might be a little bit more dead on than some of the other grades. He whiffed on that one block, certainly. But I thought he played well, and I absolutely think it's something to build on. For what it's worth, by the way, Justin Herbert is PFF's highest graded player for Week 8.
And there you have it.
Wow.
Thank you.
There you have it.
Andrew Siciliano for PFF. What do you think? No? All right. I'm trying to get you another gig.
Every day, Andrew, this is what I deal with. Every day.
Hey, at least
they gave me a PFF premium password. I use it all the time. I love PFF.
Just wait till
they're in Cincinnati.
Maybe PFF is going to start doing play-by-play grades. What do you think?
I do not want to hear my grade. Believe me, there are enough things. Hey, I listen back to the game. When I listen back to the game, alone in the dark with a bottle of brown liquor. So that's generally the way I do things. Like if I turn on the game, like from NBC or the Rant, like I do a TV game, like I watch by myself in the dark.
I'll leave it at that, and I'll look forward to doing. We'll look forward to Fact or Fiction this week during the pregame.
Thank you, buddy.
Thank you, Andrew.
You got it. See you guys.
All right, Andrew Siciliano. He rocks. He's on the Browns Radio Network. Of course, you hear him doing play-by-play every Sunday now. He's a super friend of the show. He's John Ireland. He's the play-by-play guy for the Lakers. And now he is here for the family reunion, the James family reunion, because I'm sure there'll be some folks in from Summit County to watch tonight's game. John, sorry we've had to put you through all that, all the boredom of hearing
you. Nobody. Nope. Good morning, boys.
Good morning.
It's almost over with the morning, but you will never get anybody from Los Angeles that would be upset to hear that song.
Okay.
matter of fact, I don't know if you guys noticed, but when Freddie Freeman hit the grand slam in game one of the World Series, they rolled that song before he got to second base. That is a tradition in Los Angeles when the Dodgers win and the Lakers win, they play I Love LA, and Randy Newman's the greatest. So I actually thank you for playing that. By the way, Jeff, we've been friends for 40 years,
mm-hmm.
and I've been coming to Cleveland and it's never not been in the 40s.
I know.
It's 74 degrees in Cleveland. The Cavs are undefeated. The Browns are beating the Ravens. The Guardians are in the playoffs. Now I get it. It took me this long
to see
why you love this place so much.
See?
I totally get it all in one day.
I texted John and I said, welcome to another 70-degree day in Cleveland. This is what happens when you show up in October and not February.
Amen. Amen. We'll take it.
As long as we don't
play, you, boys?
Good. As long as we don't play Randy Newman's Burning River song, right, from Major League. That would, now that would depress all of us.
Wow.
I actually thought about finding Major League last night and watching it as I was working on the game today, just because it's so nice here. I mean, it's like, this is the nicest day, Jeff, I've ever been in Cleveland. And I don't even know what second place is.
I don't think you're ever here this early. That's
no,
why.
You're always coming here in February. One time I picked him up downtown and we drove south on 77 and it was a blizzard. And coming back, I think I've never seen John look that way in my life. He was quite terrified.
Yeah, Jeff's going to take you surfing later today. I don't know if you know that or not. Yeah,
Andy, I was wondering why the hell Jeff would ever drive in that slop. I would have been on a ditch in the side of the road.
Well, you should see the van he was driving until he just retired it with 160 million miles on it. Right, Jeff?
Yeah, yes, something like that.
Jeff is
a
car connoisseur.
Oh, we know.
I know he hangs on to him forever.
Yeah, that's true.
The truth.
This is true. All right, we do want to talk a little basketball. How's the James family reunion going on? Is that fun or what?
What's weird about it, Andy, is that I actually think it's a good story. LeBron is like happy as he's ever been. He's super engaged on media day. He was like a stand-up comedian. I think he genuinely enjoys this opportunity. But boy, people outside of our world just hate it. Just hate that story. It's like I was listening to a Bill Maher podcast, and he was railing on the Lakers. Different people come on all the time, and kind of I don't understand where the hatred's coming from. He was the 55th pick in the draft. Do you know how often the 55th pick even ends up making a team? So it's an experiment, but it's kind of a fun one for us. And I don't know why, but there's a lot of hatred around the outside.
I don't think there'll be hatred tonight. Yeah, I don't think you're going to. I think it'll be welcomed. You might even feel at home tonight. I can't imagine Cavs fans are going to be upset with it.
Why would Cavs fans boo a guy other than LeBron when he came back with Miami?
Yeah, we forgot about that.
Who was born in Akron, Ohio.
That's right.
Steph Curry. I forgot.
Oh, wrong guy.
John.
Yeah.
How much does we all know Bronny needs to spend time in the G League. Well, what does he need to do to become an NBA player? Because as you just said, it's a question, and we all understand the story, and it's heartwarming. And, you know, if anybody deserves his kid to be on a roster for a while, it's LeBron. But what does he have to do to become an NBA player?
He's got to get better offensively, Jeff. Defensively, he's pretty much there. He's athletic. He's not as big as LeBron. LeBron is a legit 6'7". Bronny's more like 6'1", 6'2". But he's athletic. He's fast. You can put him on other guards, and he can cover them coast to coast. So defensively, he's there. Offensively, he's not a great shooter, so his shot needs to get better. He's good at attacking the rim. And people forget, Jeff, he just turned 20. He turned 20 earlier this month. So he would be a sophomore at USC. And his USC thing got hijacked by that heart arrhythmia,
right?
By when his heart stopped, and so he didn't really even get a full college experience. And so people say, well, the only reason he's on the team is because his last name is James. To which I say, duh, this is a once in a lifetime thing. I mean, I think if Shohei Ohtani had a kid, there would be teams that would draft him right now at age one. You're taking a calculated risk that the son of maybe the greatest guy to ever play athletically in the NBA could turn into something. And I got to tell you guys, they like him. He's a good kid. He's humble. The team likes him. LeBron gives him a lot of crap. They kind of have some fun with him, being that he's one of our two rookies. And to people that are close to the story, we're all rooting for Bronny. I know that there seems to be this social dynamic where some people aren't, but he seems to be above it all. He seems to be enjoying it. He's working really hard. Reddick loves him. Our coach loves him. And so he's going to have a chance to develop over the next 2 to 3 years.
I did like the clip that came out after that first game, because you saw LeBron the dad for a second there. And I don't think it was I don't think it was scripted. I don't think it was anything LeBron had thought about before he said it, but he was just telling him about the pace of the game. I'm trying to remember the exact words that he used. And it was just that kind of that moment where, like, a father would tell his son, hey, you're going out there for the first time in the big time, and this is what it's going to be, and just remember this. And I actually thought that was a great moment to be able to see that and watch that. I don't think LeBron cared that there was a microphone near him on that, or forgot about the microphone when you saw that father son moment that first time. And I was like, this is pretty cool.
Well, and Andy, the Griffeys were in the front row. Griffey Senior and Ken Griffey Junior in the front row. They came to see it. So it was a feel-good story. Now, we live in a cynical world, and we live in a world of social media, so a lot of people attacked it. But I can tell you that inside the Lakers tent, we're all kind of in that tent. I'm including fans and staff and broadcasters and everybody that kind of follows all things Lakers. Everybody's kind of rooting for this kid because they realize, and, you know, guys, you can do a deep dive on this. We don't have to go really into it, but he could have died. A year ago, that kid could have died.
Absolutely. They brought him back to life, John.
Right. And if not for, and LeBron talks openly about this, and so does Savannah, his wife, if it not for those first responders, that story could have had a really bad ending. And the fact that, and I think, guys, this is just my opinion, they've never told me this, but I think that accelerated everything. When they had that kind of life and death moment, they said, you know, he probably could have stayed in school and had a more college experience, but the coach left. Andy Enfield, his coach, left and went to SMU. They brought in a new guy. All of his friends on the team left. And because he could, because his last name was James, he entered the draft, and they fast-tracked this because I think they said, you're not guaranteed tomorrow. We don't know how long LeBron's going to play. We don't know how long Bronny's going to be healthy. Let's go for this. And so that's what we're watching, and like I said, most people that love the Lakers are rooting for it to succeed.
John Ireland joining us. He is the play-by-play man of the Los Angeles Lakers, and the Lakers playing the Cavs tonight here in Cleveland. John, I don't know in any sport if I've ever seen a guy get to the age of 40, play as well as LeBron's playing without slipping really at any point in his career. How's he still doing this?
Jeff, the reason you haven't seen it is because it's never happened. I mean, nothing even close. Like, I'll give you some perspective. Before, last year was year 21 for LeBron. And, of course, Andy, you and Jeff saw all the early years, and then he came back and won that title with you guys. So you guys have a unique seat and perspective on watching this. Vince Carter, in year 21, averaged more points a game than any player ever before him, and he averaged 8 points a game. LeBron averaged 25. LeBron's statistics last year, in year 21, were very similar to all the years you watched him play in Cleveland.
Absolutely.
There has literally been no drop-off. In a lot of ways, he's added elements to his game, Jeff. His three-point shot is better. Last year, his three-point shooting percentage was the highest of his career. In year 21, I mean, I got to describe it every night, guys, and I run out of adjectives to describe what this guy's doing. He had a game the other night. We were down 22, and he basically came out in the fourth quarter, took over the game. Him and Anthony Davis, basically, we had a 44-point fourth quarter. Those guys had 30 of it. And when LeBron's not scoring, he's setting up other people. Jeff, I try not to take it for granted because the question you asked is the right one. Have we ever seen this, and will we ever see it again? And I'm not sure we will.
And Johnny's playing heavy minutes too.
But that's him. I mean, you guys know him. He does not want to come out.
No.
And the one thing about I was thinking about this. Tell me what you guys think about this.
Mm-hmm.
So tonight we're watching two teams that were both good last year. They both made the playoffs last year. The Cavs had that one month, I think, where they had one loss in an entire month. Yet the Lakers moved on from Darvin Ham. The Cavs moved on from J.B. Bickerstaff. And it appears, I know we've only played four games, but it appears both teams are better. And neither team changed the roster. You know, the rosters are pretty much the same as they were last year for both the Cavs and the Lakers. And between the two of them, they're 7-1. So this is kind of a crazy lab experiment on how important a coach is. All we did was bring in J.J. Redick and a new staff. All you guys did was bring in Kenny Atkinson and a new staff, yeah. And both teams are better. So I think this is a kind of an example of a coach can make a big difference, and you're looking at two teams where that's the case tonight.
It definitely feels that way. John, as always, we appreciate your time. You're
thanks,
the best,
buddy.
And you're the only guy I really know in L.A. right now. So thanks for being my friend.
Well, Andy, like Jeff, you always have a place to stay if you want to come to L.A., but I don't know if it'll be as nice of a day as it is today in Cleveland. I can't guarantee you that.
Well, we brought you some L.A. weather.
I'm so happy that it's nice today.
I might go on vacation here next year. It's unbelievable.
Now we're talking.
I'm going to go to the pool, except that I don't know if we even have a pool at this hotel. But if we do, I'm going to find it.
It's indoors. You'll find it. Okay. Goodbye, John.
Thanks, buddy. See you later.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. John Ireland, voice of the Lakers, joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. First thing right out of the gate, we heard JOK will not play this week. We all saw his head basically kind of get whiplash when he got hurt, and it was a scary moment. And we're just glad he said he's at home today, so that's good. Give him some time, relax, chill out, feel better. And then when he's ready to come back. I'm just glad to even hear that, because initially when we saw that on the field, it was like, whoa,
scary. Yeah.
Yeah, and the way the players were huddling around, and then he gave it a thumbs up on his way out the door, too, when they were taking him off. So that was good, and I think the players kind of knew that by the end of the game, because I think they were worried. And then when they got back to locker room at the end of the game, they were like, okay, it sounds like he's going to be all right. So he's at home. That's good news. But he will not play this week. I'm just trying to look over some of the other things that
check back on Denzel Ward.
Yeah, they call him day-to-day. And normally he would say he's in concussion protocol. So I thought that was interesting. He said he's day-to-day. When most guys are in concussion protocol, coaches will say,
I would assume he's in concussion protocol, and we'll see if he can get out of it and what he decides to do.
He did say that Jameis Winston is the starter for the rest of the season, you know, as long as everything goes okay. It's his job now, right?
Well, that's good. Let's see it, you know? Andy, if the guy can play like he played last week, like he played at times in Tampa, even like he played at times in New Orleans, I think that it puts the Browns in a very interesting, difficult, challenging situation, but a better situation than they're in before he played last week.
He also brought up, I thought there was some good line of questioning there about the trade deadline. I thought when he talked about Andrew Berry, other than the fact that we found out that his wife and Andrew Berry's wife were at lunch while we were talking, was that Andrew Berry keeps him. I thought this was a really interesting line. He goes, he keeps me in the loop, but not in the weeds when it comes to what's coming up for the trade deadline. I thought that was interesting, meaning that, hey, we're going to let you know what's going on. This is what maybe if you think we need to do this, or maybe if you feel like we could improve, or I might throw a couple names at you, you tell me who might be able to fit our scheme better. I don't know. I kind of got deeper on that, but I like the fact that, I mean, I don't think Kevin Stefanski needs to be in the weeds on the trade deadline. You know, they walk up to Kevin and say, so-and-so's traded. Kevin's got to say, I got to go with the players they give me, right? I mean, that's right. The way it is in every sport.
Yeah, there's no question.
So, but I'm sure there are plenty of situations where the head coach or the manager isn't in the loop, and that they find out when the team finds out when things are going to happen. So, but he said he's not in the weeds with him on day-to-day stuff. So I think that's actually the perfect answer for any coach manager, right?
I would agree.
I don't. What else you got?
Not Kevin's job, but he needs to be informed.
Yeah, exactly. And then I had Denzel's day to day. That was the other thing I wrote down from the press conference today. He also said this is a big week of prep. So
there's a stunner. I'd love to hear a coach say, "Yeah, we're not taking this one very seriously."
You know, most people want to say it's a trap game.
Not a big deal.
Kind of say it's a game.
Chargers. Best thing about them is those uniforms.
You know, I'm kind of worried about the Dolphins game in late December. Just once,
we're really looking ahead to Pittsburgh.
Did you get anything else? Did you get anything else out of that?
I'm the anti-Menigan. I enjoy listening to Kevin.
I do. I like hearing it.
I hear what he has to say.
Sometimes we get stuff. Sometimes we don't. I mean, to say JOK wasn't going to play right away, I thought was interesting.
Good idea.
I missed it. Jameis Winston at the top of the hour was named the AFC Offensive Player of the Week. How about that?
There you go. Do you think he can become a guy? And it's been done before. You know, there are guys that take a while to get their opportunity, and then when they get their opportunity, they perform well and they become something. You mentioned Kurt Warner before. That was Kurt. You know, Kurt never had an opportunity, and then he became the starter when Trent Green went down with the Rams, and he became really good. It's a smaller group, I think, of guys who had the opportunity and went somewhere, and then it didn't work, and they were kind of considered a bust, and then they went somewhere else and did something. And I maybe bust isn't the right word, but, you know, like Sam Darnold. He was the starter with the Jets, and then, boy, he had to go and, you know, pay some dues. You could say Baker, even though I think Baker had more success here than Darnold had in New York. Rich Gannon did that and came back and was the MVP. Jim Plunkett, if you want to go way back, was the number one pick of the Patriots, kind of washed out and then became a big-time guy with the Raiders. I wonder if Jameis can become that kind of a guy.
All right, so you've been saying something for weeks, and I want to react to that. So you, especially when it comes to Jameis Winston, let's add to the fun and bring in another voice of Cleveland. You know him. You love him for the national stuff he does, though. A little bit more, I think. How about he was in England the other day? Man, this guy's all
over
the place.
Dude gets around.
He is Chris Rose, and we love him. He's on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Hello, Christopher. How are you?
Chris?
Good. How is my guy, John Ireland? He's always good.
John was outstanding.
Yeah, he does a really good job for them.
You know, he and Jeff are very, very close. They're tight.
Did not know that.
Yeah, Jeff, give him the background. John, you guys worked in the same market.
I worked at the NBC. He worked at the ABC in Beaumont, Texas.
Oh, I love that.
How about that
when your paths cross about 90 years later. That's awesome.
Took a trip to Vegas together. Lost money.
Oh, my God.
Lost money.
I don't know if we need to hear the rest of the story on this one.
Yeah.
Couple things, Chris. I do want to get to the Browns in a second, but I was, you know, as always, I follow you on Instagram, and you caught my eye yesterday when you're like, oh, man, the Yankees have really disappointed us in the World Series. But then last night, they came back. They made you eat your words a little bit last night. What do you think?
Yeah, it was nice to actually get some semblance of a series, and we'll see if they make it more interesting. I know that Cleveland fans aren't very interested in hearing that aspect of it, but once we were eliminated, I was kind of fascinated by a matchup we hadn't seen in more than four decades. And although some of the games were close, it just felt like there was a serious lack of energy from New York ever since Freddie Freeman hit the walk-off grand slam in game one. Obviously, things went a little bit different last night. Dodgers using their B-list bullpen for the most part. And we'll see what happens tonight. Could be fascinating.
Chris,
as long as those two jerks aren't allowed back in the stadium.
How about that, man? I thought he was going to steal his glove at one point when he watched the replay. I'm like, what's this guy doing?
Yeah, I think the most disturbing part of it all is that according to one ESPN Jesse Rogers report, those two guys said they were told by the Yankees brass that they could come back for tonight. Like, there's no way in the world those guys should be allowed anywhere near there. And one of them is a season ticket holder. I'd revoke their season tickets. I wouldn't want anything to do with them. They're not. I can't believe I'm giving them any more pub than need be. But here's the way it would play out. They'd be back in their seats tonight. Fox would show them 18 times. Mm-hmm. They'd end up getting a podcast of their own. And all of a sudden, we'd twist this around where somehow they're becoming famous for being jerks.
So what?
Never happened before.
Dan and I had a conversation before I went back and watched the replay of it again today. Like, what is a fan's right there? Like, because they went way over the line. They were like, take the ball out of the glove. Well, I mean, like, that's ridiculous. But I do think that if you're a fan and it's the opposite team, and although this would be to steal a home run, not a foul. Well, no, even on a foul ball because it's still an out. That you, as a fan, maybe you should yell and scream or try to distract them from catching the ball because you're trying to help your team. But those guys cross the line.
Yeah, I think it's pretty simple. Don't rip a ball out of somebody's glove. Like, that's number one. Number two is do not grab a body part of somebody that's playing in a game.
Well played.
I love the quotes that these guys have. They're like, we're the defenders of the wall. I was like, oh, really? Like, you're on the Yankees payroll and enrolled in their 401k? That's awesome. Maybe other teams should look into hiring fans, you know, to be the protectors of the wall. Like, you guys, and one of you idiots is wearing sunglasses at night. Like, don't sleep on that part.
That's great. It's the crapshoot of baseball. The middle of that Yankee lineup was so terrific against the Guardians, and it's been so pedestrian, I guess, against the Dodgers. It's one of the things I love about the game. We know where this series stands right now. Do you think the Dodgers are a significantly better team than the Yankees, or do you think they're just comparable and they've won three or four?
Oh, I do think they're better. They're a better team and they're a better organization. I mean, the Dodgers are really doing this without a bunch of guys that would be helping them. And their stars are more consistent, it feels like. I mean, obviously, I don't know what's going on with Aaron Judge. I mean, this isn't a 2024 thing. This is a real, like, Barry Bonds before 2002 playoff sort of struggle for him. He's still, you know, listen, they could rip off four in a row, be the first team in the World Series era to ever come back from a 3-0 deficit, and, you know, maybe things can change. But that's, I think, rather alarming for a lot of fans out there. But I do just think, I think the Dodgers are a better organization than the Yankees. I'm not saying the Yankees are a bad organization. I just think that they got an incredibly easy run. I should say, I'm not going to say easy. I'm going to say the easiest run they've had to a World Series since 2009. What I mean by that is, if you were to line up the 15 years of teams they had to face in order to try and get to the World Series, this was the easiest. Some year has to be the hardest. Some year has to be the easiest. If you were to have combined the lineups of the Guardians and the Royals, the two teams that the Yankees beat, take the best players out of those teams, it's still not as good as the Dodgers. That's not being mean. That's just, those are facts. And we'll see.
All right, let's switch gears. Let's go Browns. Are you, not that you would ever leave the bandwagon, but do you a little bit more excited about the Browns after what we witnessed on Sunday moving forward? I know the odds are slim of them seeing the postseason, but I got to tell you, it felt really good to walk out of that stadium on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, guys, it looked like an offense. You know, that was the most reassuring thing here, is that they looked like a professional operation. There's nothing more difficult to watch in sports than when your offense stinks. Like, it is hard. In order to do my prep for the Patriots-Jags, I had to watch every New England game. That was brutal.
Sorry about that.
Until Drake May got in there. And then they started to look like a real offense. I love Jacoby Brissett. There just aren't enough playmakers up there to make him look like a solid starting quarterback. He did here when he started the first 11 games in 2022. He was throwing the ball downfield, all sorts of stuff. That didn't happen in New England for the first five games, and it was a mess here. Now, if we want to talk about why that is, okay.
Why?
I think we all know why.
Yeah. Tell me this. What's your gut tell you who's the starting quarterback of this team next year? Is it somebody?
I don't know.
Well, is he even on this roster?
So here's what I can answer. Jameis has given us reason to be excited, okay? And I get that.
Amen.
But it's like when you've been eating fast food every day for a year, and then all of a sudden you go to like a 3-star restaurant, maybe 4. And you're like, nice. Oh my God, this food is incredible.
Wait, is the baked potato with a meal or is it a la carte? That's the difference.
That all depends.
Yeah.
So Jameis has always been a fun guy to watch when he's not on your team, because he'll keep his team in the game and the other team in the game. Like, he is the greatest coin flip quarterback in the history of the sport. What guy hits 30-30 in the NFL touchdown to interception ratio world? It just does not happen. It's incredible that he was able to do that.
With 5,000 yards.
It's one of the greatest sports feats in history.
Yeah.
And he could have been picked off four times on Sunday. Like, that's part of the deal. Now, some people will say, well, Lamar could have been picked off four times. I get it. Yeah, Denzel had his hands on one. MJ had his hands on one. Yes, it definitely could have happened. But let's be serious here. We're not going to compare what Lamar Jackson brings to the table compared to what Jameis Winston does. Is he a capable starter? Yes, I think he's a capable starter. Is he the guy that can win you a Super Bowl? I don't think so. Then there's no shot at that. I don't think there's a lot of guys that can. But I really, you know, when people say, well, Nick Foles did it. I get it. That was like worlds coming together that year. I just don't, and let's remember, the Eagles didn't bank on him being the starter. Carson Wentz blew out his knee late in the season, and that's why Nick Foles ended up being the guy. It just, he's given us a lot of hope because based on what we had to sit through the first 7 weeks or 6 weeks of the year.
Sure.
And that is beneficial to us as fans. But if we're trying to look big picture, and we'll deal with it in the offseason, I don't know if that's the route you want to go necessarily.
Okay, Chris, I want to go back to something that you had said earlier and just talk about London for a second, because you were just there and you had, I mean, you had 2-1-5 teams at the time too. How was it? And in particular, how long did it take you to get there from Los Angeles as we look about, you know, the future and trying to have more, obviously having more games there, especially if we had 18, just, you know, what would make it easier and where are we headed with this thing? What do you think?
All right, you got to repeat the back half of that question. I kind of zoned out for a second.
That's okay, me too, because it was too long, and I was trying to figure out where I was going with it. But I know exactly where I'm going. What when we talk about the NFL in London or anywhere in Europe, like, how can they make it easy on the teams and make it work? Because Jeff and I talk about this a lot. And then the other question I had, I know that it was Jacksonville, New England, but you had to come from L.A. How long did it take you to get there?
Well, I can just tell you, my wife and I went together to London. We arrived on, we flew Wednesday afternoon, so we left here at 4 o'clock. You just can't, you know, there's really odd times for flying. So when you leave at 4 o'clock and it's a 9.5-hour flight, it's hard to kind of fall asleep. We did not sleep on the plane. We were not right until Monday, till after the game.
Wow.
Like, we couldn't. Now, part of that, I got to be honest with you, part of it was I was watching Guardians games at 3:30 in the morning. Like, I, you know, what was I supposed to do? Try and sleep while my team's fighting for a spot in the World Series? That wasn't happening. So, but
if it makes you feel better, I did the same thing for opening day, and I was sitting in Italy. So I was up in the middle of the night doing the same thing and the eclipse. So you're not alone, my friend. You're not alone.
Yeah. So I don't understand how the players are able to do it when they, like, the Patriots got there on Friday morning for a Sunday game. You know, just, and we talked to him on Saturday. We talked to a handful of the players. They said, yeah, they're a little tired, but it wasn't bad for them. Like, they were able to get through it. I guess that's what happens when you're 30 years younger than an out of shape dad bod guy. But like, as far as big picture, will it work? Will there ever be, are you asking me, will there ever be a full time team there?
Yeah. I mean, how's it? Basically.
I think there's a ton of logistical stuff that has to happen in order for that to, because just think about it. Like, if you got a team in London, they would have to come over here and play like 3 straight weeks. Right?
Right.
And then when you're sending teams over there a week at a time, if you're sending the Rams over there to go play the London whatevers, the London Big Bens, you're asking the Rams to do what I just did, and I just told you that my body wasn't right until like 4 or 5 days later. So that's a huge advantage for the team that lives there full-time. Let's not even get into the, well, how do we get free agents there? What does the salary cap look like for that team? Is it really fair to draft kids over to a foreign country that is, you know, 5 or 8 hours away from what they're used to living in? Like, there's a lot of things that would need to be answered.
Faster planes, that's all we need.
Yeah.
That'll make it work. Yeah. Chris, as always, you know we love talking to you. Thank you, my friend.
Thank you, Chris.
All right, boys. Always enjoyable.
We love it. Thanks, Chris. We'll talk to you soon. Chris Rose on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. As we continue to talk more about the Browns and your chance to cruise with the Browns as well. Played for the Browns for 3 years at linebacker, pride of Wisconsin, probably the second most famous, 4 years, sorry, for 4 years for the Browns, and then probably the second most famous Brown from Wisconsin, right? Would you say that? Or you can be you're number one right now, I'll tell you that. Joe Schobert's on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. That Joe Thomas, he just keeps getting in the way, doesn't he?
It's guys named Joe from Wisconsin. They like him.
Yeah, I was going to say, second most famous Joe from Wisconsin. I'll take that.
Fair enough. We'll put you in the Hall of Fame. We'll put the annex in the Hall of Fame in Canton. Does that work?
Yeah, I just need a little asterisk. That's all I need.
That sounds good. Hey, Joe, first of all, what are you up to? How's life treating you?
Good. Me and my wife and family live out in Colorado now, and just life's treating us well. Great place to be to get outdoors, and we're just I enjoy watching football this year, so it's been good.
How'd you pick Colorado?
We like the mountains, like to ski and hike and fly fish and do all that kind of stuff, so seemed like a good place to be.
Nice. That's outstanding. You played 4 years for the Browns, and you were here mainly during the Hugh Jackson time when you were with Freddie Kitchens. How difficult was it to be on a team that, and even though you got a pretty good run with you, that had been historically in transition?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the first 2 years I was there were the lean years. So we didn't get a lot of success for the amount of work we put in, and just being in a constant state of transition, even though Hugh was the head coach, we did have multiple defensive coordinators and multiple position coaches. So you never really got to like feel like your feet were set in the ground. And like when I went other places later in my career, different environments, some environments were very similar to that, always in transition, and some were much more established. And you just feel like the comfortability in the building and people knowing what their role is and what they're supposed to be expected to do every week is just different. And when you're in transition all the time, you never really get that feeling.
Joe, as you watch the game right now too, especially, I mean, Pro Bowl, outstanding in college as well. As you watch the linebacker position kind of emerge and evolve into different things, what are your thoughts on the state of the position right now and the impact it has on the game? Because we're watching JOK right now, and he'll be out this week, but he's playing some great linebacker right now for the Browns.
Yeah, I mean, my main thought is I'm glad I'm not playing anymore. it's become more hybrid safety linebackers where you get like JOK, like just a phenomenal athlete, not necessarily a big guy. He can hit, obviously he's very physical, but he's not what you'd describe as a thumper, not like a Ray Lewis kind of guy.
Right.
And it feels like linebackers, especially the Will linebackers in a 4-3 or like sometimes the Mike linebackers in like the Tampa 2 schemes are much more like strong safety type bodies, where like if you took even from 10 years ago, Cam Chancellor, a strong safety, he's bigger than probably 80% of the league's linebackers this day and age. So it's transitioned to be much more defensive against the pass, and I think the defenses have caught up and passed the offenses in that, in the majority of things, because you just see how great quarterbacks and good offenses are struggling to score points this year just because the defenses are so well-equipped to play against the pass.
Joe, with that thought in mind, you know, decades ago, in 3-4, whatever it was, running backs were like the star players, and middle linebackers were the stars on the defense. And now it seems like teams think they can get anybody to play both of those spots. Is that because of the emphasis? And first of all, do you agree? And second of all, the emphasis on the passing game might bet that be the reason why?
Yeah, I definitely would agree with that statement. It seems like there's a much more of a plug-and-play philosophy in terms of running backs and linebackers in the NFL this day and age, where, like, the schematics, it seems like the stars of the teams are now the edge rushers and then the safeties, the guys who make plays in the passing game, who can really disrupt games from that aspect, because there's not teams lining up in pro formations trying to run the ball downhill except for the Ravens. But even they have a very unique scheme for running the ball. It's not traditional pro formations. So there's just not that emphasis on those positions. Like, you obviously still have the marquee players like the
Fred Warners and stuff at the linebacker position, but it very much seems like a lot of linebacker spots are filled in with the cheap rookie guys who have fresh legs, who can run around and just be kind of plug-and-play guys this day and age, as opposed to what it used to be.
Hey, Joe, when you reflect back on your days with the Browns, like, what were some of the favorite things you liked about Cleveland and playing for the Browns?
Yeah, I mean, I loved, especially when Greg Williams and that defensive scheme came in, I loved playing for Greg and just the mentality that we had on defense. And, I mean, we weren't successful my first 2 years, so, like, the us-against-the-world mentality was great. And when we came, like in year three, when we went 7-8-1, it felt like we were winning the Super Bowl just because we were finally seeing some success on the field. We were fighting for a playoff spot. Like, we still had that mentality, and Greg put that mantra in there. And then just being in a city for 4 years in a row, you start to know like what you can do. Like, we stayed all year round, so we were there living in Strongsville in the off season, and like we had our things that we like to do, the places we like to go. I'd go play basketball with a group of guys on Monday night at North Olmsted High School. So it's just like the fun stuff that you kind of get when you are in a place for a while. Those are some of my best memories. And then, like, me and Carl Nassib and some friend Seth DeValve would always go to a place called Samurai Hibachi Bar in Strongsville, and just had great fun times at that spot.
And after all that, I know a guy has to make a living, and I know that's the answer. And after all that, after a year in Jacksonville, you went to the Steelers, Joe. What the hell, man? Come on.
I mean, I got traded, so I had no choice. So.
Yeah.
You could have gone to Colorado then.
Yeah. See, I'm not Joe Hayden. Joe Hayden signed with them, so there.
Yeah.
That's why I'm the second favorite Joe. Joe Hayden's the third favorite Joe. That's what we should say.
Boom.
That's great. Hey, how was it being in Pittsburgh after being 4 years with the Browns, and obviously the Browns' biggest rival? I would think after getting over the initial shock that you're now playing for the Steelers, I admire their organization, and I wonder what it was like.
Yeah, I think it's that's the biggest difference is the culture in the building, because they've been there. Like, the coaching staff has been pretty consistent for the last 15 to 20 years, so that everybody in the building knows what they're supposed to do. Like, a bunch of the players have been there for 15 and 20 years as well. Like, when I was there, it was Ben's last year. Like, Cam Hayward, like T.J. Watt was there for 7 years at the time. You got long-standing players, so it's just like the day-to-day football aspect, like schematic aspect of it, was not different at all. In fact, I'd say like in Cleveland, we worked harder during the week than we worked in Pittsburgh. But everybody was comfortable in their role in Pittsburgh and knew what they were doing, and that just like sense of comfortability on Sundays led to, like, we won a bunch of games in Pittsburgh by 3 points. And like in my past experience with like the Browns and the Jaguars, like those are the games we lost on last second field goals or giving up a 2 minute drive at the end of the game. Where in Pittsburgh, we were on the other side of that coin. And it was honestly just like the comfortability feeling of everybody in the building knowing what their role was every week during the week at any given time, you know?
You talked about Seth DeValve for a second, your buddy, and then Craig Robertson, Christian Kirksey, Josh Cribbs. There's a bunch of guys going on this cruise, this 5-day Caribbean cruise, March 3rd through the 7th coming up. Your thoughts on that and how much fun that'll be? You'll get a chance to. And if anybody wants to hop on board with that too, you can always go to clevelandbrowns.com and /fans, and you can go find the cruise on there if you want to hop on board with these guys. But that sounds like that's going to be a lot of fun and a pretty good reunion for you guys.
Yeah, definitely. I'm looking forward to seeing a bunch of the old friends, and who's going to turn down a 5-day cruise in the Bahamas? Being able to see old friends and hang out with a bunch of rabid football fans, it's going to be a blast. I'm really looking forward to it.
It does sound like fun.
I'd hop in a second.
You better be ready to talk football like crazy, though, Joe.
I know. That's what at the end of the year. The good thing is March is like the lull in football season, the off season, so you are ready to actually like speak about it. It's not oversaturated at that point.
If you're going on the cruise, it's meet and greets, it's autograph sessions, it's the alumni hosted group dinners, they're having a beach party, and so all that stuff's available at clevelandbrowns.com if you want to check that out, /fans. I do want to ask you about your Big Ten roots there for a second. Your thoughts on how Luke Fickell's doing? Obviously, he was a favorite son of Ohio when he played at Ohio State. He's probably one of my favorite guys to cover when I was in Columbus, too. Your thought of Wisconsin football right now and the general overall state of having the Big Ten on the other side of you now, where you live in Colorado and seeing all these teams out west that are in the Big Ten now?
Yeah, I think first, like Luke Fickell, I think the Wisconsin program is taking steps in the right direction, but the Wisconsin program right now is very much in flux in terms of, since COVID hit, I feel like Wisconsin kind of didn't respond to like the COVID, the ups and downs of everything that followed from 2020 on. And we're still trying to find our footing again back where we were in the 2010s, where we were playing in New Year's Six Bowl games, the Orange Bowls, like competing with Ohio State for Big Ten championships, and just kind of trying to find our identity again. And I think Coach Fickell is doing a good job in terms of building that identity. But like with all change, like things are going to happen. And when you don't produce immediate success in the field, like you see every week, week in, week out at the NFL, people get fired for like not producing immediate success, even though it is an extremely hard thing to do. There's going to be disgruntled people, but I think once like Coach Fickell, this is his second year, like it's his, gets like his 4-year cycle of recruiting class, and his recruits start to get like juniors and seniors. That's the time to really judge exactly where the program's going. But for now, like I went back to a game this year when they played Alabama, and in terms of like, we lost, but it was mostly because of execution in terms of like the athletes and the physicality on the field. Cause I was able to be down on the sideline. It looked like two even teams physically and athletically going at it. They just were able to execute better than us and take advantage of a couple of mistakes that the Badgers had. And then once it snowballed, it got a little out of hand. But in terms of just like, I was impressed with the like physicality and athleticism of the team. So I think once we kind of find our footing under his regime, there's a chance for us to be really, really good. But obviously you have to have time to input your stuff.
Joe, I have 10 seconds. I just wanted to ask you really quick. Jump around is probably one of the best traditions ever, college sports. I think it is.
Oh, definitely. Definitely one of the best traditions. It's like, especially night games, the crowd's going crazy, the building's shaking.
It's awesome.
You're winning. It's great. It's kind of like, I mean, obviously this is Cleveland podcast, but like in Pittsburgh, when the Renegade is going and you're on that team, it's amazing. When you're on the other team, it's demoralizing. But when you're on the other team and you're beating Pittsburgh and they play it, then it's like funny. And so it kind of goes both ways. Like when the other team's doing the jump around, it's a little bit annoying.
I don't know. As an Ohio State guy, it was amazing. Joe, have a great cruise. Thank you so much. We really, really do appreciate your time.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Joe Schobert right there. 5-day Caribbean cruise, March 3rd through the 7th. You want more info, go to clevelandbrowns.com. So there's a little bit of news about New York and the two idiot fans that were trying to steal the fall ball yesterday out of Mookie Betts' glove. There's an update on that now?
Yeah, MLB has released... Well, I don't know if release day statement is the way to put it, but MLB is asking the Yankees to ban the fans who interfered with them. They will get a refund for the Game 5 as well. So it is seeming like they will not be there tonight.
But it sounds like MLB's it's up to the Yankees. Asking. Yeah. They're asking. Does that? I wonder if that means it's going to happen. And I think it gets into that next part of the story. Like, what is a fan's right in that situation? Obviously, well,
there is no right in that situation.
Well, so what should a fan, like, we had this conversation before. Like, I think if I'm sitting in that seat and I'm a Guardians fan and a Yankee's coming over to make a catch, I'll yell and scream and do whatever I can to distract him because I want the hometown team to win, right? But what those guys did was just, it was over the line last night. I mean, they tried to take...
You think?
They took the ball. Mookie made the catch, and then all of a sudden... You know, these guys are like trying to open his glove, and they did, and they got the ball out, and the ball popped out. And I think if you looked at it from first glance, you're like, hey, what happened there? He didn't catch that. And then you knew it was fan interference from like, you know, from the second that the play went into the stands right there. But then they touched
the other guy
too.
Grabbed his wrist.
Yeah, that's wrong.
Yeah, that's, I mean, it's all, every bit of it's bad. But grabbing his wrist a little after the fact, I think, is, might be the worst part of the whole thing.
Yeah, although the one fan looks like he's taking his glove off. I'm like, what are you doing?
Well, if you can get a good glove for cheap, Andy.
Well, that is true. I mean, when you saw the, you know, he went back in, he pulled the ball out. The umpire was right on it. It's a good thing they have 7 umpires in this game because then we'd have to go back to replay. But the fans were like yelling back, like, hey, this is our wall. You can't do that.
We protect the wall. Sure.
I mean, I see the one guy covering his face because he didn't want to get hit with it, but that's one of the fans that rejected. What if the Yankees tell MLB to go pound salt?
Which they could.
Yeah.
And
you think they'll kick him out of the league?
You know what I think? What would you think?
Please, pretty please.
What would
with
you
cinnamon,
think
the, sugar, and sprinkles, and a cherry on top?
You know what's worse than kicking them out of the league? Giving them a salary cap.
Please?
The Yankees would have to have this. They'd be the only team.
Let's not go that far.
No, you don't want to do that. Okay.
What would you think the fan base there would think if they let those guys keep their tickets?
Anybody can do anything they want.
What would you think the fan base would think of those two guys in particular? I think they would become heroes.
If they let them back in?
Yeah.
Yeah, they'd be heroes tonight.
Yeah.
It's like I was saying, you know, for the last game, when the Guardians were playing the Yankees at home, after the early home run in that game where the Yankees took the lead for the first time, this total knucklehead got up on the Yankees dugout and started dancing on the dugout roof. And, you know, like Slider does with the dancers, same thing. He looked like Slider. Like, I rarely tweet anymore, but I tweeted.
Fuchsia
that was
suit
like,
and everything?
He might as well have had one. His face was fuchsia from a few cocktails, I'm sure. But he was up there and he was dancing, and I'm like, this isn't good. Because I was sitting next to some Yankee fans, and I go, hey, your buddy's about to go to the jail that's underneath the third base dugout over there. And they were like, what? I go, you can't jump on top of the dugout and start dancing like an idiot. Like Slider. Slider's not an idiot, I'm just kidding. But you can't get up on the dugout and start dancing.
Andy Baskin hates Slider.
I do not hate
Slider.
I am personal friends with Slider. I love Slider. So
ding.
My point is you can't do that, right? And all I can did I just get a ding for being friends with Slider?
I am personal friends with Slider.
Slider and I vacation together. Sunscreen really soaks into that fur.
Listen,
I'll tell you that.
I don't know if you remember back in the day when he broke his leg and he had to come back. I was there. I was at the hospital for him.
I'm sure you were.
I was. Who was it? Was it Kathy Lee? What's her face? That was there for Joe Theismann. Do you remember?
It was Kathy Lee Gifford, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't.
Kathy Lee Crosby.
It was Kathy Lee Crosby.
Yeah, Kathy Lee Crosby.
Who was in the hotel room during, was that Monday Night Football where they went live to the hotel, to the hospital? That was probably one of the sickest injuries we ever had seen at the time.
That was not good.
I mean, that, you know, we still to this day, when somebody, like, you think they break a bone, it's a Theismann injury, right? And then they go to they're in the hospital. Was it the next day or the next week? And she was sitting there by his side in the hospital. And I'm just like, oh my God, what am I watching here? So I did that for Slider.
I'm sure Slider appreciated it. Vocally thanked you. Either that or put his tongue in your ear.
It's just real. No, that's the Philly fanatic. Come
Slider,
on,
you
man.
Need me to run out and get you a cheeseburger. I know this hospital food's horrible.
It's just weird because Slider can't talk back to you. So now you're trying to, you know.
No wonder you're good friends.
That's because he can't argue with me. It's kind of hard to argue with a guy that all I can do is move his arms up and down, right? And start yelling at you. And then
wiggle his belly. You got to figure out what that means.
Yeah. And then he tries to hug you to death. Or the next thing you know, you're out on the field and you got to race against him and his knucklehead friends, the onion and mustard and ketchup. Come on, man. We can do better than that. I don't even know. Where did this conversation start? It started with Mookie Betts.
You're leading the show today, pal.
Thanks,
you got
man.
Me.
By the way, we're waiting for Jameis Winston. When the Reverend steps up to the podium, we will hear the sermon that he has to say about.
I like Pastor Jameis better.
Dan, will you just break the tie so I don't have to? Because he wants
the
to
Reverend,
argue with
isn't
me
that
about
James
it.
Brown?
I mean,
where's Roosevelt? He'd tell us.
I mean, it was a Reverend Al Green, too.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
Kind of like Al Green.
I think it all works. I think there's no wrong answers.
Yeah, you got to break the tie because every time I say Reverend, Jeff's going to go, I think preacher's better. Just
I didn't say preacher. I said pastor.
Pastor, sorry.
Well, the thing with pastor is it sounds too close to the pastor not. Who's Josh Dobbs?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah,
that's the
that's
only
true.
Problem with pastor.
That's, well.
Can we give him a nickname?
I mean, famous Jameis pretty much sums it up.
That's pretty tough to be.
Yeah, famous Jameis is awesome.
Yeah, but that doesn't give you the full power and impact of his emotional repartee with the media when he steps up and has a press conference. Like, you just don't. What was the line he had the other day about we play for the sticker on the back of our helmet?
Oh, but wait a minute. We don't have one.
We don't have any stickers. I loved it. I'm like, that's a guy who's cut from the same cloth
as
me.
At least
that was very close to a basketism.
But he figured it out on the fly.
Yeah, that's the kind of stuff that
was pretty good.
Like, as the stupid words come out of my mouth, I realize them, and then I try to backtrack and come back around on that. So we're going to have his press conference when we come up. All right, so you never answered my question, though. Like, how far can a fan go in that situation?
Well, and
you guys are going to be so uptight about this stuff.
You can't do that at all.
You shouldn't make contact. That's easy.
You're supposed to get out of the way.
There's no way I'm getting out of the way. I'm going to stand up, and I'm going to yell as loud as I can and try to distract him from catching the ball. Why wouldn't you? You can't. They're not going to kick you out for that. Drop it. I don't think there's anything. That's being a fan. You think it's wrong to do that?
It didn't.
Oh, sir, let me give you some room so you can catch this.
That's not what you asked.
Well, how far should they be able to go?
Well, you shouldn't be able to make a play on the ball. You're not supposed to.
At what point are you? Once you know the ball has clearly made it into the fans? Because now you're making a play.
I don't know anything about fan behavior on foul balls in the field of play. To me, you get out of the way.
Menigan, would you get out of the way?
I would never reach into the field of play. I would never reach into anyone's glove or anything like that. I don't know if I'd get out of the way. I think I would attempt to catch the ball if it crossed.
If it's coming at you, you're allowed to.
It's the touchdown.
That's self-protection.
Thing, you know?
That's like, also self-protection.
You know, it's sure. Like, here's the line, and where does it cross the plane?
And so the thing about Betts last night is that he was even with the wall when he made the catch. So it could have been in play. It was close. You know, so the fans are on the other side of the wall. You're right. What'd you think of Jameis Winston?
Kevin Stefanski's right. He's a ball of energy. He's got a lot of juice. There's no question about that. One thing that's impressed me about him, and maybe it's nothing that should impress me,
mm-hmm.
He's been very, very, very tactful in talking about Deshaun Watson. And talking about being the guy who's playing quarterback right now. And I just appreciate that. I think, you know, regardless of what you thought about Deshaun or what you do think about Deshaun, I think Jameis has handled the situation perfectly, as well as it could be handled.
Yeah, I don't know what else he could say. That's, you know, but he doesn't, but you know,
he could say nothing.
Yeah.
And instead... He's actually saying things and handling it perfectly. So that rather than just, you know, not saying much of anything, I think he's saying some really good things. I give him credit for that. I'm impressed.
I do want to switch gears because we haven't had a whole lot of time to talk about it tonight. And we did talk a little bit about it with John Ireland, the Lakers play-by-play voice. Your thoughts on this game tonight? I mean, the Cavs have been hot. They got a good win the other day against the Knicks. You know, we could sit and talk about the first three games of the season, they were supposed to win those games. But winning at Madison Square isn't exactly easy. And
it's a good game.
I thought they played well. I like it. And I thought that, you know, John brought up a great point that the difference between the Lakers and the Cavs are you've got two new head coaches going at it.
I would think it's a game the Cavs should win. I think you have a better roster than the Lakers. And I think they're playing at home. So those two things make me think they should win. It doesn't mean you're going to win. But anytime LeBron comes back, since he was here the second time with the Lakers, it's been a big group hug instead of an animosity-filled situation as it was when he came back with Miami.
Yeah, I don't – what do you cheer when Bronny goes in the game, or are you just kind of – it's just another player?
I don't cheer when you go into the game.
Oh.
I would, though. If you went into the game, I would. You went into an NBA game, I'd cheer.
I appreciate it. And if
I'd
you
stand
went
up
in
and scream, AP!
To get up there and do your Rick Barry free throws, it'd be great.
AP! Yeah. I was never good at that.
At the Rick Barry free throws? I was. In the backyard. Because we had a hoop in our backyard. Everyone used to stop by and play. Like, we lived the first house off of South Taylor. And we had this giant bee on our garage, and which is gone now. So I feel good for the folks that live there. And, like, we would
name started with S.
Yeah, that's probably true. Random people would show up in our backyard to start playing basketball. I just hop out there and start playing. My dad didn't care. We didn't care. I can't tell you how many pickup games were going on in our backyard. I'm like, all right, I'm going to go play. Some people back there. I don't know how I ended up. My question, though, like, how do you think the fans are going to respond tonight to?
I would hope he gets a nice round of applause.
I would think so, too.
He's a kid who spent a good portion of his youth here in Northeast Ohio.
Yeah, that's about it.
He hasn't done anything to anybody here.
True.
So.
And, I mean, when you go back and look at his story, and if he goes to the G League and ends up coming back and is successful, I think we'll talk more about what John Ireland and you both talked about when it comes to Bronny, is this, I mean, medical miracle of what happened in college and the fact that now he's in the NBA. And I thought John told a pretty good story of
yeah,
where he's at in his life and why he's here right now. And maybe if that hadn't happened, he might have stayed in college for another year. And, you know, it gave them the opportunity to be able to pull off this feat. I don't know. It's pretty cool. I mean, look, he's a G League player. That's really what he is. But he's got the opportunity right now.
He's like a lot of guys in the NBA, you know, kind of two-way deals, and we'll see how it works. He, Joe Varden from The Athletic wrote a piece on Bronny, and it was kind of interesting. And going back and looking at the school that he went to here and talking to people at the school.
Ultra?
Yeah. And there were a bunch of pictures. And one of them is LeBron holding Bronny when he was 3-4 years old. And I thought, I remember that little kid running around the court.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that little kid is now going to be on the court playing probably tonight.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty cool moment. I mean, if you can just kind of enjoy the moment tonight and then watch the Cavs go out there and hopefully win the game. That's the way it should be tonight.